says that both Yitzchak and Rivka davened that she should be able to have a child. The Medrash says that one sat one corner, one the other corner, and they davened L'nochach ishto, Vayetar lo Hashem, and Hashem answered him. So Rashi brings down the Chazal, Eino Dome, Tfilas Tzadik ben Tzadik, with Tfilas Rasha, Tzadik ben Rasha. He answered him because his tefillah was greater, because a tzaddik ben tzaddik is greater than a tzaddik ben rasha. So a few problems. First problem is l'chora that contradicts the Gemara. The Gemara says b'makom shebalei tshuva omdim afilu tzaddik gomrei no yochol lamod. Right, in a place where balei tshuva stand, they're even greater than a tzaddik gomer. So if a bal tshuva is greater than a tzaddik gomer, why isn't his tefillah greater? First question. Second question is that there was a tshuva from the Rosh. The Rosh was asked the following question. They had two candidates for a bal tefila for Yom Noraim. One candidate didn't have yichus. His parents were not all that great or whatever. He was a self-made person. But he was a Talmud Chacham. The other person had tremendous yichus. Right, but he wasn't up to that on the level of the first person. So who gets the tefillah? Whose tefillah is better? The one who has the yichus or the one who's a self-made person? So the Rosh says, what do we care with this guy's yichus? The main thing is the person himself. L'chora, that Rosh is connected to this Gemara. Because Gemara says that Eino Dome tefillah tzadik ben tzadik, he has schus avos. Is a greater tefillah than tefillah tzaddik ben rasha. So you see that the yichus does make a difference. Not like the Rosh says. In addition, another problem. It says that, so we say that a bal tshuva is greater than a tzaddik, right? Makom shebalei tshuva omdim afilu tzaddik gomrei no yochol lamod. On the other hand, in Shulchan Aruch, it paskens that you don't bury different levels of tzaddikim one next to the other. A tzaddik and a chassid used to have separate cemeteries, sections for different levels of people. And a tzaddik and a chassid didn't bury together. We don't have those differences. We're not sensitive anymore to those differences. So we just bury everybody together, except people not Shomer Shabbos. We don't bury next to people who are Shomer Shabbos. But a tzaddik and a chassid, you don't bury together. A chassid is lifni mishura, says there's a higher level. But a tzaddik and a bal tshuva, you can bury together. Why isn't it the same thing as a tzaddik and a chassid? Different levels. So in order to understand all this, I want to say like this. What is the maila, the makom shebalei tshuva omdim? What does that mean? Each one, the bal tshuva and the tzaddik gomer, or what they call them today, the FFB, right, the guy who's from birth, right, have a mila, two separate milas. The person who was a tzaddik gomer, in other words, from birth, has a mila of quantity of mitzvahs. He obviously amassed more mitzvahs over his lifetime, right, and less averas because he was from birth. He didn't have a time when he was being over averas or whatever. But the person who's about tshuva may not have quantity of mitzvahs, he has quality. Why? Because he has a harder time making those choices since he, what's it called, knew the other way. So he has to make conscious choices to keep Shabbos, to eat kosher or whatever, at least in the beginning of his quest, till he really gets settled in. So every time he chooses to eat kosher, not to be Mechal Shabbos, he has a much more quality choice than the person who was like that since birth and pretty much that's his habit. He doesn't have that strong choice to make. Okay. So if at any one moment you look at the tzaddik opposite the bal tshuva at that moment is going to be greater than the tzaddik because his choice is a much more quality choice than a tzaddik. You look at any one moment, they're both keeping Shabbos. The bal tshuva's Shabbos is a lot more quality than the from birth Shabbos because he has a stronger choice in that respect. Whether they keep Shabbos with like kavana and only send mekayim the mitzvah, that's a separate thing. It has nothing to do with being a bal tshuva or being a tzaddik. But in disrespect of making that conscious choice, the Baal Tshuva has it over the Tzaddik. But if you look at the totality of their lives, from beginning to end, right, the Tzaddik has a mila over the Baal Tshuva. And that is that quantity-wise, he was from more of his life than the Baal Tshuva was. Whenever he was a Baal Tshuva, he's missing that chunk of his life. Therefore, that's what the Gemara says. B'makom shebaalei tshuva omdim. If you take them at any one specific moment and freeze it in time, the Baal Tshuva is greater than the Tzaddik. But if you take the totality of their lives, it evens out. Therefore, where they're standing, the Baal Tshuva has it over. But where they're lying, right, to bury them together, it evens out, and therefore you can bury them together. Each one has a mila, and over the course of their lives, it evens out. That's one. That answers that question. The other question is, l'chora, so whose tefillah is better? So Rav Aaron Krakotsky, the Rebbe in our yeshiva, said a nice vort on this gemara, a very nice chap. I have a different pshat, but I'm going to tell you what he says, because I really think it's nice. So wherever we find Chazal say, Eino dome, this to this, it's always the lesser one precedes the greater one, right? Eino dome, what's it called? What's a Chazal that has that lashon? Eino dome, right. She'ein bo paslo, mishiyesh bo pasbasalo. What? It's greater mile of pasbasalo than ein bo pasbasalo, right? Okay, whatever, you get the idea. So the chovah here, what's the chazal? Enodome tefillah tzaddik ben tzaddik l'tefillah tzaddik ben rasha. It should have said just the opposite. If it meant that the tefillah of a tzaddik ben tzaddik is greater than the tefillah of a tzaddik ben rasha, it should have said enodome tefillah tzaddik ben rasha l'tefillah tzaddik ben tzaddik. But it says the other way. It's explained like this. It says, why were the imahos akaros, the Gemara says, because Kadosh Baruch Hu mesavel et tefilasim shel tzaddikim. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to daven. He wanted to give them a reason to daven with a Rebbe Kavanah because he loves their tefilas. Therefore, if the Rabban Shalom answers a tefila first, that shows that the tefila is not such a quality tefila. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, I'll answer it. I'm not interested in you davening more. But somebody doesn't answer, right, is because he wants to hear that tefila even more. That means the tefila is greater. That's what it says. The reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered him is because Eino Dome Tefillah Tzaddik Ben Tzaddik, which is not on the same level as Tefillah Ben Tzaddik Ben Rasha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mesavel Tefillah Tzaddik Shel Tzaddikim, so he, Bedavka, wouldn't have answered Rivka because he wanted to hear more of her Tefillah, but he answered Yitzchak because his Tefillah is not all that great. So it fits in perfectly. Yeah, okay, but that's what it means. Had it been only, what's it called, Rivka, he wouldn't have answered so fast. But since it was Yitzchak's tefillah, okay, yeah, it's a good time. But in any case, that's the idea, is that it's a very cute chap. Okay, but because of this taina, the Maisa, in the end, Rivka didn't have to daven either then. So, yeah. So I want to say a different pshat. Pshat's like this, very simple. And that is to be distinguished between the Rosh and here. Here they were davening for themselves. Okay? Then the tefillah of a tzaddik ben tzaddik, so not only does he have his own schus, he has his schus of his father, and therefore he's answered first. Because it's not only my tefillah that's doing it, it's my father's schus, and it's my inyan. Okay? Masha'en Kain, when you're davening for a tzibur, there your personal schus has nothing to do with it. Right? There you're a shliach of the tzibur. The tzibur has a lot of sechuyos. The tzibur has your schus also. You're part of the tzibur. There, the main idea is what kind of shliach are you? So there, it makes more of a difference who you are rather than who your avos are, because your avos, the tzibur anyway has that mila. So that's not something the tzibur is going to be missing if somebody else davens. So what is the difference? Only who's greater. So therefore, when it comes to a tefillah for other people or you're a shliach at tzibur, there your yichus doesn't make a difference because the tzibur has that same schus also. You're part of it. So Elamai, it's who you are that makes the difference. When you're davening for yourself, then your yichus makes a difference. Your schus avos makes a difference if your tefillah is answered or not. Yeah? Pretty simple and clear. Okay. That's that. Next. Yaakov and Esav, we spoke about this at length at some point. I'm going to just speak about it very quickly. Yaakov and Esav represented two divergent views of life. Whether life in this world is an end in itself, and therefore the goal is immediate gratification. Enjoy yourself in this world, right? Everything is for the sake of this world. Or this world is a means to reach an end. Those two ideas are Holomaz a dome of the prose or bifnei Holomaboa. It's merely a preparation room for a castle. And there's no intrinsic value to this world. It's only as a preparation for the next world. What you do in this world creates eternity. And the other philosophy is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And enjoy yourself, or the one who has the most toys wins. So that is represented by Yaakov and Esav. It says they split Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. It doesn't mean that Yaakov took Olam Haba and didn't have any Olam Hazeh, and Esav took Olam Hazeh and didn't have any Olam Haba. What they split was, what is the main thing? Is Olam Hazeh only important because it is a preparation for Olam Haba? That was Yaakov. And Esav said, I'll take Olam Hazeh for the sake of Olam Hazeh. Not only for Olam Haba, I want Olam Hazeh for the sake of Olam Hazeh. And that's why Esav was born Asui, already mature, because everything is here in the now. It's not for the future. Yaakov, on the other hand, was Ishchalak, right, and he was holding on to Akev Esav. He was looking to Akev. What's going to be in the end? Not what's right now. It's now, but for the sake of something in the future. That's why, according to the Pashup Shat of the Psukim, Yaakov was a shepherd and Esav was a hunter. Difference between a shepherd and a hunter is, a shepherd is willing to put in a lot of work now for a future benefit. He gets no benefit from this animal as he raises it. The payoff is later on, when the animal matures and it gets wool and you could shecht it or you could get the milk or whatever. But during the early stages, you're putting in a lot of work and you're not getting any return. You're doing it, you're investing for the future. But a hunter doesn't want to put any investment into this animal. He wants to wait till the animal's mature, run into the forest, kill it, and eat it. So a hunter is the kind of lifestyle of immediate gratification. And the shepherd is the one who wants to put in work now for a future benefit. So that was the difference between Yaakov and Esav, which represents the Torah perspective of life or a secular perspective of life. Okay. Another thing we spoke about in the past, I just want to mention one point from this week's Sedra about it. It says that when Esav discovered that Yaakov took his bracha, so he's very upset. And he says to Yitzchak, I mean, you probably have something left for me too. I mean, so Yitzchak tells him, I'm sorry, but I gave him everything. Right? I made his, he was subservient to him, and I gave him all the brachas, and there's nothing left. So it's Esav says, there must be something left. A bracha achas, you must have one bracha for me. And he starts to cry. And after that, immediately Yitzchak gives him a slew of brachas, not one bracha, a slew of brachas that we're suffering from till today. So the question is, where do you get those brachas? Right, the sentence before, he told him there's nothing left. We lied to him, there was something left. Where did he find these brachas? In his back pocket? What happened? Say the Bali Musar, there were no more brachas. But when Esav cried, and he had that tremendous desire to get a bracha, it created new wellsprings, new reservoirs of bracha, right, in Shemayim. Sometimes a person's will, if he wants something enough, right, can create new potential. There's a similar thing in a medrash that the Kotzker Rebbe explains. It says that there was a person who didn't even know Aleph Beis. We've mentioned this medrash before in a different context. And he was mocking Eliyahu HaNavi. So Eliyahu said to him, look, you can mock me all you want, but what bothers me more is after 120 years, you're going to have to face the Beis Nishamala, and the first question they're going to ask you is, what's it called? One of the first questions is, the Trilas did, is on Divrei Torah. Right? Kavati Itim Matorah. You don't even know Aleph Beis. Aren't you afraid of the question? He said, no. He said, I have an answer rehearsed, and God's going to have to admit that I'm right. He's going to usher me right away into Gan Eden. He says, okay, I'm curious. Let's play Beis Nishamala. I'll be the Beis Nishamala. You be you. I'll pop the question. You tell me your answer. Okay. He said, okay, how come you don't know Aleph Beis? You didn't even learn Torah. Forget Torah, you don't even know Aleph Beis. And I says, because Bina lo nitna li min ha-shamayim. I'm dumb. It's not my fault. I was born dumb. I have a very low IQ. I can't learn. I can't learn Aleph Beis. Right? I'm dyslexic. I'm whatever it is. Right? God didn't give me the opportunity to learn. It's not my fault. It's God's fault. And God's going to have to admit that I'm right, and he's going to usher me into Gan Eden. Eliel says, sounds like a good answer. Just tell me one thing. What do you do for a living? So I'm a fisherman. So describe for me what you have to know to be a fisherman. He says, well, first you have to know how to make nets. So you have to know how to, what's it called, make rope, and then from the rope we make nets, and it's not so simple because if you make the holes too big, the fish will go right through. If you make them too small, the fish will see the nets. It'll look like one wall. So you have to make them just the right size so the fish don't notice it, that it's a wall, and they don't go through it. Then you have to know where to put the net. If you put it in the wrong place, not going to catch any fish. You have to see from the bubbles that come up where the fish are, whatever, and put it not too deep, not too shallow. And then we catch the fish, and we clean them, and we sell them. That's how I make my living. He says, interesting. For fishing, God gave you brains. And Aleph Beis, you couldn't learn. And the guy realizes he's a self-contradiction. He starts to cry. He says, his excuse is not going to hold water. Kutzker Rebbe asks a very simple question. What was the fact over here? Was the guy too dumb to learn Aleph Beis? Then how did he learn how to fish? And if he wasn't so dumb, how did he fool himself and think he was? So what was the case? Was he dumb or not? Says the Kutzker Rebbe, he was dumb. 100%, he was right. He appraised himself 100% right. He could not learn Aleph Beis. He was totally, really low IQ. Okay? Aye, so then how did he learn how to fish? Said, because fishing, he realized that if he doesn't learn how to fish, he's going to starve to death. If he doesn't have a profession and he doesn't have a way to eat, he'll starve. Sometimes when a person is faced with a do or die situation, you find the potential that you don't have. Your will to live, right, creates new potential. Okay, we know people that in normal circumstances couldn't lift 50 pounds. But in an earthquake, when a wall fell on them, they were able to lift a wall that weighed 300 pounds off of them because they knew that if they didn't lift the wall off of them, they died. People who never could learn how to swim, when they fell overboard, all of a sudden they learned how to swim, or they didn't learn anything else after that. So when you're in a situation of do and die, sometimes you can create potential you didn't have under normal circumstances. So this guy looked at fishing as a do-or-die situation. So he learned how to fish beyond his potential. Had he looked at Torah as a do-or-die situation, he would have learned Torah too. But Torah, take it or leave it. You know, I can do without it. So if I can do without it, I remain with my initial potential. My initial potential is not to learn. I can't learn. Like it was done. So when Esav cried and wanted those brachas, he created new brachas. And we're suffering from that. It says that when Esav cried, he cried two tears. One went out of his right eye, one went out of his left eye. The right eye tear destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. The left eye tear destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. And a third tear welled up in his eyes, never fell. Had he cried that third tear, there wouldn't have been a third Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Medrash says. What's the idea? But the idea is, why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Because we got a bracha, and we ignored it. We didn't appreciate it. So when Esav appreciates his bracha, and we don't appreciate our bracha, that's a tremendous bikoret, a tremendous critique, tremendous condemnation of Klal Yisrael. But even Esav didn't appreciate enough for three tears. Had he appreciated enough for three tears, it would have been a tremendous condemnation. We never would have third Beis HaMikdash. But even Esav didn't appreciate that much. So the condemnation isn't as great. Okay. Next. Rashi brings down what seems to be a different pasuk. Yaakov says to his mother, I'm afraid that Yitzchak's going to discover who I am and that I'm trying to pull the wool over his eyes, literally, right? And he's going to curse me, not bless me. So he's concerned. He's going to get a curse. What does Rivka say? All I kill a loss of me. Simple pshat is, I'll take the curse. Don't worry about it. I'll take the curse. Then Yaakov goes. Understand? When he's worried that they're going to curse him, he won't go. Okay, curse my mother. Okay, you know, but that's her problem. What kind of son is that? You should have said, Ma, I'm not only concerned about cursing me. What if they catches me and curses you? So I don't want to do that either. So the Targum says that the Medrash says that Rivka said b'nevuah, not that necessarily she was a prophet. It's a big shaila whether Rivka was a prophet. She's not mentioned as one of the prophetesses. There's seven prophetesses, and Rivka is not mentioned as one of them. Yet it says, Bayom Rashem La, Rashi says, through a shliach. She went to a Navi. The Navi told her. So here, b'nevuah doesn't mean she had the nevuah. Means that it was told to her b'nevuah for whoever she went to ask Nevias. Shane and Aver, whatever. So she said, I have the nevuah. All I kill, lost chabani, you won't get cursed. I accept responsibility, not that I accept the curse. You're not going to get a curse. I have, prophetically, you're not going to get cursed. And the Sfarim say even more than that, all I hints to the three tsaris that Yaakov had in his life, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. So that's why Yaakov, when they told him that, what's it called, that they want Binyamin, he says, look, all I hold you kulana. I already had all the Olais, the Ice of Lavan and Yosef. This one wasn't mentioned. There's no Beis over there. What's with Binyamin? Olai HaLukayuka, what are you going to take? Shimon he took away, and now Binyamin? Olai HaYuka, I don't understand. They told me only going to have three tsaras. Now I have what, Shimon and Binyamin? So that I understand. Rivka told him there's not going to be any Kalala. But the simple meaning of the Pasuk doesn't say that. Simple meaning of the Pasuk is, Rivka said, don't worry. If there's a curse, I accept it upon me. And then Yaakov went, why didn't he say, my, I'm concerned about you too, not just about me. So I was thinking to answer in a very simple way. There's a machlokas in the Gemara where the kibud av ha'em is mishel av or mishel ben. Okay, meaning the following. My father says to me, make me a steak. That's real. That's the real kibud av ha'em. But machilo, mashkeu, listening to your parents is not kibud av ha'em according to many opinions. Except it's what's a great, it's mora, but it's not kibud. Kibud means serving them. Okay, listening to them where it doesn't make a difference to them per se, right? Your mother says, put on a sweater. Right, it's 90 degrees out, right? But she's cold. So put on a sweater. You don't really have to put on the sweater. It doesn't make a difference to her, except she's mitzvah. It's really cold out. She's afraid you get pneumonia. Then it's serving her needs. But if not, there's no mitzvah per se, except it's covered to listen to her, whatever. So if you do it in a covered dick away and you don't, she doesn't know, you didn't listen, it's okay. If you're hot and she's cold and she wants you to put on a sweater. Okay, in any case, so kibud is the real kibud is serving your parents. So the father says, I want a steak. Okay, fine. So what is the chiyuv? Is the chiyuv to buy my father a steak and make it for him? Or to tell my father, look, you want a steak? He said, hey, give me the money. I'd be happy to go to the butcher and buy it for you and make it for you because I have to serve you. But I have to support you. You have to support me, whatever, right? But I'm supporting you. So give me the money and I'll be happy to go to the butcher. This is machlokas. The halacha is Michel Av. The child does not have to spend money. His parents need tzedakah. They're the first tzedakah. But if the father can afford it, I'm not mechuyev to support you. I'm mechuyev to serve you. You pay for it. I'll make the steak. Mamela, when Yaakov said, I may get cursed, I don't have to lay out my welfare for you. I don't have to listen to my mother if I have to pay for it. And here it's a lot more than money. He was going to pay for it with a curse. Rivka told him what to do, and it meant a lot to her, right? She didn't want Esav to get the klala, to bracha. She wanted Yaakov to get the bracha. So Yaakov said, you know, look, there's a chance here that I'm going to have to pay for this. And I'm not mechuyev to pay for kibud ein. Then I'm not going to go. Once Rivka said, no, if there's a curse, you're not going to, it's not going to be on, you'll be on me. Then it's Michel Ein. Then he had no choice. He had to listen to her because of kibud ein. Right? Once she accepted on herself, and that's why it says, he went, onus v'kofuf, he was forced. He was forced by the mitzvah. It wasn't anymore his choice. Because now he had to listen to his mother. So, till when it was possible, he'd have to pay for it, he didn't have to listen. When she accepted the payment from her, then he has to listen. Okay. One more point, and then we'll speak about something more general this time. Yaakov Avinu was Midas HaEmes. Torah, Emes, Tiferes, all the same thing. Right? Avram is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gvura. The synthesis between Chesed and Gvura is Emes. Because Chesed is one extreme, Gvura is another extreme. The Emes is when you balance them out together and you're Mekayim both of them. So he's the Madrig of Torah, Yaakov, Avram is Chesed, Yitzchak was Avoda, and Yaakov is Torah. Torah is Emes. L'chor, if anybody, right, didn't represent Emes, it was Yaakov. I mean, here's the guy who goes and fools his father, right, gets his bracha from his brother, you know, by giving him his nezid adoshim, right. Yaakov seems to be Okov, like it says. Okov l'misho, crooked, right. But he wasn't l'chor, he was not an ishtam. So what? Right? So, where's the MS? Now, the answer is MS is not how things appear on the surface. MS is what is true eternally. Because this is an Olam HaSheker. The world we live in is not a world of truth. It's a world of appearances. The main thing the Yetzer Hara has is to make things appear attractive when they're really not attractive at all. And I always like to say that if it doesn't look like that, I mean, this looks like a real Olam HaSheker, right? So it's a false world. False means it doesn't really exist. Because falsehood doesn't exist. So a Sheker ain't lo reglayim. Sheker doesn't have any feet. Because there's nothing to stand on. It's not real. It's just imagined. MS has a broad base. Aleph, Mem, Tav. It's the letters of the Aleph base from beginning to the end. Broad base, and each letter has either 2 feet or a base. Sheker, no, there's no either 1 foot. Kuf and a Resh only have 1 foot, and the Shin comes to a point. There's no basis to it. Olam HaSheker. That's why the Nachash, who represents the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, his legs were taken away. There's no leg to stand on. A snake doesn't have any legs. It's not, it's a sheker, okay? But l'maisa, the world looks pretty real to me. How can you understand all of my sheker? So I'd like to say, this lesson hit home many years ago when Disney World opened in Orlando. And so the first time it opened, I took my family there, Chol HaMoed Pesach. First, was just... Mamash, they weren't even finished. They opened it, but they were still working on some of the things. And one of the exhibits in Disney World is the Hall of Presidents, where they have robots that are, you know, what's it called, electrically programmed. Right? This is probably, it's now, it's even better. This was in the 1970s, right? So talking 40 years ago. Now I'm sure with the modern technology, it's even better. But then these presidents, first of all, looked alive, real. They yawned, coughed, walked around, gave speeches, what's it called, in the supposed voices that they... Unbelievable. Mamish unbelievable. So I had one of my sons was about six at the time, and we came into this Hall of Presidents, and he looks at me and says, "Tati, are those people real? Are they on the stage?" I said, no, just a bunch of dummies. That wasn't the thing to say, since I got some really, really not nice looks, but it was true. They're like, right. I said, no, they're not real. They're just like dolls or whatever. So I could see that he started to, like, you know, think for about 5 minutes. He didn't say a word. And then he looked up to me, says, "Tati, is this chair real?" Like, once he didn't know if those people were real, then he doesn't know what's real anymore. Then maybe I shouldn't sit down in the chair. Maybe that's not real either. And then I knew the next question was going to be, "Are you real?" Right? Because now nothing's clear to him anymore. Because if that's not real, I don't know what's real anymore. I came back and Shabbos Chol HaMoed spoke about Olam HaSheker. Because the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave Disney, Walt Disney, the power to make a world of fantasy. But it looks real. Looks real. Because if you don't think that the world that looks real could be a world of fantasy, look at Walt Disney World. So in any case, so this is an Olam HaSheker, it's not the real world. What's real? What's eternal? What's really behind all of this? It's a facade. So whatever promotes eternal reality is emes. And whatever promotes fleeting reality is not emes. It's sheker. And Mela, that's what the Pasuk says. In ikesh tisakosh, with a crooked person, deal crookedly. Why? Because if I promote his agenda, then I am promoting sheker. So what's going to be the end? The sheker. But if I deal crookedly with him, what's going to happen is that the end result will be the emes. Because I'm, like you said, out Esaving the Esav. So Esav, his agenda is sheker. But if I'm able to detour that sheker, I'm going to come out with emes. So that's real emes. So Yaakov Avinu got what really he deserved. Esav didn't deserve that bechorah. And Esav didn't deserve the brachos because of that. If Esav had gotten the brachos, that wouldn't have been the emes. That would have been total sheker. So Yaakov, in order to get to the emes, not that the end justifies the means, but dealing with sheker and outsmarting it is emes. That's what emes is. Right? It's like the Gemara says that Hillel says at a chasana, okay, you say, kala no v'chasuda. So Beis Shammai says, but what if she's not a kala nor a chasuda? And the Torah said, midbar sheker irchak. So how are you allowed to lie? So the simplest answer is, it's darkei shalom. What are you going to gain by telling the truth? Like the chasam says to you, what do you think of my bride? Oh, I think she's a disgusting, what's it called, witch. Right? Right. What are you going to gain from that? Right? Here, what does God want? He wants you if he should ask you before the shidduch, and you could avoid it, maybe that's what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants. The guy shouldn't marry her. But now he's married to her. So what are you going to accomplish to make this guy not love his wife? Right? To have doubts about her? What is that? That's going to be emes? That's not what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants that there should be shalom bayis. So the emes over here is, what's going to be eternally good? That's the emes. So by your saying kala no v'chasud, you're saying the emes, because emes is not the facts. Emes is what is eternally desirable, what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants. That's emes, and that's the emes. Emes is not necessarily the fact. So you think she's a mir samachsheva? Who cares? Who cares what you think? Right? That's the facade. What's emes over here is what's going to lead to what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants in the world. So say, that's why you're allowed to change mitnei ha-shalom, because the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants shalom. So he's not interested in your facts. He's interested that what you say brings shalom to the world. That's emes. Yeah.
Yaakov's talking about Torah. Maybe she's talking about a couple in Yerusha, so you can tell. But he's talking about the schus to do the avodah in the basic interest. The Rashi breaks down.
I can't sell your kahuna. the could be the comparison is not the same. When the kahuna was given to Kohanim, it was theirs. Nobody else could do it. Before the Torah was given, and even before the Kohanim were picked, any Jew could do the Avoda, except the Bechoros had a Kedima. But otherwise, any Jew could do. Before Matan Torah, anybody could be a Kohen. Bahariah Malki Tzedek was a Kohen. Right? Anybody, and it says when Mashiach comes, the Rabban Shem will take from the Goyim to be Kohanim Lefonav. In other words, Mishorsim. So before Matan Torah, either of them could have done it, but Esav had the Kedima. Right? That you could sell. I could sell that Kedima. Right? I'm not going to be the one to do it. I will defer to you. But he had that possibility. They ask another question, though, that Lechora, this Lechora wasn't right now, it was for the future. So, Ein Adam Makna Dover Shalom Ba'olam. You can't buy something that doesn't exist yet. So there's a Rivash that says the following. That was only after Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, you couldn't buy something that's not here yet. But before Matan Torah, you could. Okay? So the question is, what's the difference? Before Matan Torah, the whole idea of not buying something, you can't buy something that's not here. Now the idea is like this. Really, I could make a kinyan on something that's not here, that when it comes here, it'll be mine. Why doesn't it work? Because a kinyan means smichas das. That I, demiras das, how do you say that in English? I have come to a meeting of the minds. Meeting of the minds. Right? That I for sure want to sell this, and you for sure want to buy it, and our desire, our decision, final decision, creates the change of ownership. But something is not here yet. I can't really come to a final decision on it because maybe it won't come. How do I know? You know, it's probable to come, but you can't say that I'm nachush, I'm 100%, because there's still a place here of the unknown. That's after the Torah was given. What was before the Torah? Yom HaShishi, Shishi B'Sivan. The whole world was on a condition that if Klal Yisrael accept the Torah, then the world will exist. If not, it goes back to Tohu Vavohu. That means before the Torah was given, nothing was 100%. Because it was always depending on the Kabbalah Satorah. So there's no difference between something that was here and something that wasn't here. But after the Torah was given, there's a difference between what's here and what's not here.
Perhaps you can offer another thing. It says Shnei Deizim, Rashi says, one with the Karban Pesach, and one with the Karban Chagigah. So Yitzchak says, who brought me the Karban? Esav has Kedima. But then when he hears that Yaakov bought the Torah, then Yaakov Taka has Kedima, and he says, oh, the Shnei
Deizim. Right, okay. I think that covers pretty much everything I wanted to do, except the major thing that we spoke about last year, so I'm sure you all remember, the midos of Yaakov and Esav were not predestined. They just had different character traits, but that doesn't make you a tzaddik or a rasha. You could use any character trait for the good or any character trait for the bad.